but is it doing any good?
The first hint that star power was firing back at him came when Harbin's control board suddenly sprung a half-dozen amber warning lights. Without hesitation, he hit the maneuvering jets to jink Shanidar sideways. It ruined his own shot, but it moved him out of harm's way. Temporarily. Frowning at the displays, Harbin saw that one of his propellant tanks had been ruptured. He looked up at star power, hanging out there, and saw the big hatch of the ship's cargo bay was open.
They must have a laser in there, probably a cutting laser they use for mining, and they're shooting at me with it.
He maneuvered Shanidar away from the open cargo hatch while checking his ship's systems. Fortunately, the propellant tank they hold was almost empty anyway. Harbin could afford to jettison it. Yet as he did, he began to worry that they might hit remaining tanks before he had the chance to finish them off. Staring at the dumbbell shape of star power, rotating slowly against the distant, uncaring stars, Harbin's chiseled features twisted into a cruel smile.
"Kill or be killed," he whispered to himself.
It took only a few days of running Helvetia Limited by herself for Amanda to come to the conclusion that she didn't need to hire a replacement for Niles Ripley. "I can do the systems management job myself," she realized. With the habitat more than halfway finished, what was needed was a general overseer, a straw boss who understood the various engineering fields that contributed to the ongoing construction program. Amanda had learned a good deal of the technical skills in her training and experience as an astronaut. The only question in her mind was whether she had the strength, the backbone, to boss a gaggle of construction technicians. Most of them were men, and most of the men were young and full of testosterone. In general, men outnumbered women in series by 6 to 1. The balance on the construction project actually was better. 3 men to each woman on the team, Amanda saw as she carefully reviewed the personnel files. Sitting at her desk, she thought, if Lars were here, there would be no problem. But if Lars were here, he would take over the task or hire someone to do it. Shaking her head, Amanda told herself, it's up to you, old girl. You've got to do this for Lars, for all the people living here in Ceres. Looking into the mirror over the dresser of their one-room quarters, Amanda realized, no, not merely for them. You've got to do this for yourself. She got to her feet and surveyed herself in the mirror. It's the same old problem. The men will see me as a sex object, and the women will see me as competition. It has some advantages, of course, but in this case the drawbacks outweigh the advantages. Time for baggy sweaters and shapeless slacks. Minimal makeup and keep your hair pinned up. I can do it, she told herself. I can make Lars proud of what I accomplish. She set a goal for herself. I'll handle this project so well that when Lars returns, he'll want me to stay with it to completion. Despite her best control, though, she could not avoid hearing a fearful voice in her mind that said, if Lars returns.
He's coming closer, Nodan shouted. Wincing inside his bubble helmet, George hollered, I can see that, and I can fucking hear you, too. No need to yell. The 2 space-suited men tugged at the big aiming mirrors of the cutting laser, clumsy in their suits as they tried to slew the coupled pair of copper slabs on their mounting. The mirror assembly moved smoothly enough. Pointing it precisely was the problem. It had been designed for slicing ore samples out of asteroids, not hitting pinpoint targets that were moving.
Lars, you gotta rotate us so we can keep him in our sights, George called to the bridge.
I'm doing my best, Fuchs snapped. I've got to do it all by hand. The steering program wasn't designed for this. George tried to squint along the output mirror's focusing sight and bumped the curving front of his helmet against the device. Cursing fluently, he sighted the laser as best he could.
Oh, that's there, he said to Fuchs. Bastards coming straight at us now.
Tell me when to fire, Nodan said, hunching over the control board.
Now, George said. Fire away.
He strained his eyes to see if the beam was having any effect on the approaching ship.
We can't miss him, not at this range, George thought. Yet nothing seemed to be happening.
The attacking ship bored in closer. Suddenly, it jerked sideways and down. He's maneuvering, Nodan stated the obvious.
Shut down the laser, George commanded. To Fuchs up on the bridge, he yelled, Turn us, damn it! How am I going to hit him if we can't keep the fucking laser pointed at him?
A string of red lights sprang up across Harbin's control panel.
The propellant tanks. He's sawing away at them.
He was in his spacesuit now. Once he'd realized that star power was shooting back at him, He'd put on the suit before bringing Shanidar back into the battle. His steering program was going crazy. The swine had hit a nearly full tank, and propellant spurting from the rip in it was acting as a thruster jet, pushing him sideways and down from the direction he wanted to go. He had to override the unwanted thrust manually. No time to reprogram the steering to compensate for it. Besides, by the time he could reprogram the stupid computer, the tank would be empty and there'd be no more thrust to override. In a way, though, the escaping propellant helped. It jinked Shanidar in an unexpected burst, making it difficult for the enemy to keep their laser trained on him.
"But I can't afford to lose propellant," Harbin raged silently. "They're killing me."
The amphetamines he sometimes took before going into battle were of no use to him now. He was keyed up enough, stimulated to a knife edge of excitement. What he needed was something to calm him down a little, stretch out time without dulling his reflexes. He had a store of such medications aboard the ship, but inside his spacesuit, his cache of drugs was out of reach, useless to him.
"I don't need drugs," he told himself. "I can beat them on my own."
He called up the highest magnification his optical sensors could give, and focused on the area where he'd briefly seen the red telltale light of their guide laser.
"That's where the danger is. If I can see the beam of their aiming laser, they can hit me with the infrared cutter."
Swiftly, he came to a plan of action.
"Fire the thrusters so that I jet up and across their field of view. As soon as I see the light of their guide laser, I fire at them. I can get off a pulse and then be up past their field of view before they can fire back. Once I've disabled their laser, I can chop them to pieces at my leisure."
With a semicircle of display screens curving around him, Fuchs saw the attacking spacecraft spurt down and away from them, a ghostly issue of gas glinting wanly in the light of the distant sun. He could see a long, thin slit slashed across one of the ship's bulbous propellant tanks.
"You've hit him, George," Fuchs said into his helmet microphone. "I can see it."
George's reply sounded testy.
"So, swing us around so's I can hit him again."
Fuchs tapped at the control keyboard, wishing he was more adept at maneuvering a spacecraft. Star power was not built for graceful turns. Pancho was right, he remembered.
We turned slow and ugly.
In the cargo bay, George stared out at emptiness.
"Where the fuck is he?" he wailed.
"Still below your line of sight," came Fuchs's answer in his earphones.
"So turn us toward him."
Nodon said, "The cooling system needs more time to recover. We have inadequate coolant flow."
"Just need a few seconds, mate," said George, "once we get him back in our sights."
He stepped up to the lip of the cargo hatch and looked down in the direction he had last seen the attacking vessel.
"There he is," George saw, "coming our way again."
The attacker was zooming up swiftly. George turned back toward the laser. "Fire her up," he yelled to Nodon. "Firing," Nodon shouted back. A blinding flash of light stunned George. He felt himself toppling head over heels, and then something slammed into him so hard it spun him like an unbalanced gyroscope. Through blurry, tear-filled eyes, he saw a space-suited arm fly past, geysering blood where it had been severed, just above the elbow, rotating over and over as it dwindled out of his view. He heard someone bellowing in pain and rage, and realized it was himself.
"I'm a dead man," Harbin told himself.
Strangely, the knowledge did not seem to frighten him. He sat back in his spacesuit, relaxed now that the tension of battle had drained out of him.
"They've killed me," he thought. "I wonder if they know it."
His plan to silence the enemy's laser had worked, after a fashion. He'd popped up into their field of view and fired off a full-energy burst as soon as he saw the red dot of their guide laser. They couldn't have revved up their laser in time to hit him, he was certain of that, not unless they already had their laser cooking and he'd walked right into their beam, which is exactly what had happened. Harbin knew he had knocked out their laser with his one quick shot, but in doing so he had sailed Shanidar across the continuous beam of their mining laser. It had carved a long gash through two of the remaining propellant tanks, and even sliced deeply into the habitation module itself.
"I'll have to stay inside this damn suit," he growled to himself. "For how long? Until the air runs out? Hours? Perhaps a day or so? No longer than that."
He pulled himself out of the command chair,
thinking, of course, I could tap into the ship's